Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
In the year 2455, on a routine training mission, a team of students is about to discover a life form frozen in time.
Wow.
They're on their way back. Prepare for docking and power up the lab.
You brought them on board?
Everything's under control, man.
Going on.
Jason Voorhees, that's what's going on.
He's an unstoppable killing machine.
Guys, it's okay. He just wanted his machete back.
How do we get off the ship?
I don't know.
Look, we're gonna be all right.
What? Are you high?
Uh-oh.
He's here.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 288, Jason X. Now, it's been said that there's only so many ways you can skin a cat. Well, when it comes to Friday the 13th and the series, you could say that includes eviscerating, decapitating, mangling, strangling, butchering. Where can you go from a series that's based on camp counselors getting murdered in quick succession by a masked maniac? And the answer to that question is a literal one: to space. And that's where this one takes place. Jonas is here as a substitute for Jeff, so I'm going to introduce him now. Jeff is feeling a little under the weather, so we have a temporary, and we've made that quite clear to him, temporary guest host here to wax poetic about all things Jason X. Jason Voorhees in space. So thanks for taking the time to chat as we celebrate Friday the 13th.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and thanks for, to Jeff for allowing me to fill his very, try to fill his very big boots.
So you're thanking me for being sick, so good on you.
Well, you know, that complicates things. But
it's show business, you know, where you gotta, you know, step up and take your chances. You're the understudy, and so here you are in the spotlight. How do you come to Friday the 13th? Do you hold it dear, near and dear to your heart? Are you mostly indifferent? The butcher of Camp Crystal Lake, what's your thoughts on him?
So my my relationship with Jason, kind of the same as with Mike Myers and Freddy. You know, they all kind of were in the same time period that they seemed to start out. And they all seemed to be the first movies that I was aware of that just came up with sequel after sequel after sequel after money-making sequel. And so I, you know, I mean, I think I've seen the first of each one of them, but I mean, maybe three out of any of the series, of those three series, would have been the most. So I certainly not near and dear to my heart, but you know, when I do watch one, it's usually pretty entertaining and pretty fun.
One thing I can say about those three franchises is that this is the only one about which I confuse every single installment, and that cannot be said for The Incredible Nightmare and Halloween. Those all work as such great independent beasts. Whereas Friday, I mean, I'll be damned if I can remember when Jason, you know, was fired that whatever arrow into somebody's, in the victim. Like, oh, was that 3, 5, 4, 1 even? Hell. I don't even know, but this is not one I hold in particularly high regard, only insofar as that it's more of a nostalgia play for me. It's like a warm blanket. It's like a sweater that you can't throw away. Like, I own a Jason mask. I have nice. A Jason shirt of Jason playing cards. I love Jason, but the films are more like, it's something I just go to under times of stress. Other people turn to the bottle. They turn to reality television. They go on vacation. When I'm under duress, I kind of watch these films. So, I mean,
right.
When I found out that there was a gaping hole in my Friday knowledge, and that came from this one. Wow. Having not seen it, after having seen all the others, I thought, man, what better time than to visit this one, not revisit, and just dive right in to a movie based around a concept that I've been fascinated by for a while, cryogenic freezing.
Right.
The concept by which you freeze your body tissues in the hopes that one day, in the far-flung future,
medicine will
advance to the point
where all your ails will be cured.
Yeah, and then they will de-thaw you like a roast, and then they'll put you in whatever convection DNA oven to butcher this analogy beyond belief or this metaphor, and they'll thaw you out, and you'll be, if not good as new, just a warmer version of your previous self. and fully functional. So it's pretty funny that when we start this movie, we're in the Camp Crystal Lake research facility, and who other than David Cronenberg as Dr. Wimmer to head up such a facility, obviously doing it for the paycheck, not for the, you know,
passion of the arts, you know, love of theater.
Yes, exactly.
You know, he must have, I don't know, I mean, maybe it was just going to be really fun for him to be in a Jason movie, and I think that's probably a lot to do with it.
Well, I think given we have the same alma mater, he went to University of Toronto and studied science as well, so maybe he just is exercising his wannabe mad scientist demons. So he's just hamming it up as this goofy researcher.
Yeah.
And their experiment is interrupted by Jason, who they've been trying to
terminate.
Right. Yeah. And
the chair didn't work. The lethal ejection didn't work.
Nothing. The man is indestructible.
Firing squad, I think she says they tried, which is kind of amusing in the first place.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen that depicted.
Oh, right.
Yeah, probably for budgetary constraints.
Jason, can you stand still for a moment, please? put your arm down.
And he ends up somehow being cryogenically frozen along with one of the extremely attractive lab research assistants.
It helps. It helps. If you're going to be frozen with someone, you know.
Yeah.
You know, then you can't touch or do anything with.
Well, yes. Interesting you should mention that you can't touch. So, fast forward 500 years, and there's some planetary explorers, and they come upon this...
The remains of this research facility.
Yes. And they decide, against their better judgment, to resuscitate these two, because 500 years from now, you'll be glad to know that this technology is without any bugs and that they can just
reanimate.
Yes, excellent. I will. I have. Reanimate these two, and because it's become old hat, it's become just easy breezy. And
pop them on the table, the little ant things go, and, you know, miraculously.
Yeah, there's even a P.T. Barnum type who wants to exploit the reanimation of this Voorhees fellow to take on the road and charge admission, even though one of his critics says, listen, we've been doing this for 100 years, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal?
And he says, well, this is an older one, so that's going to draw eyeballs because, well,
yeah.
What do you know? What I learned... And we usually do a segment called
What Have You Learned?
But I learned 500 years in the future, people speak the exact same variant of English as they do in 2000 when this movie was released.
I noticed this, and I was thinking to myself about just how completely common and regular the speech was. But then I also started thinking as well, how many movies that are set in the future, do you really have people alter... like in the film, do they alter their speech or the vocabulary that significantly? Not too much, I guess.
No, it shows the dearth of imagination that has been plaguing sci-fi movies since time immemorial about like what the future will look like. Like it's when you think like I think we both read Chaucer in class.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's ye olde English.
Right.
And that's maybe what 15th century. Nascent English language literature.
Right.
So that's 500 years ago, give or take. And if we were to read that now, I mean, we needed, you know, maybe neither of us is particularly bright. We needed a lot of help.
You need a dictionary next to you, probably.
We're wading through good old Chaucer. And to, you know, I mean, hell, we throw in Shakespeare as well.
Right.
I remember we were both students in Germany, and I remember the English teacher, when I was taking classes as a student in Germany,
right,
I was in English class thinking I would just breeze through everything. The English teacher asked me what a harbinger meant, and he says, oh, we're going to turn to our Canadian friend, my 16-year-old self was unable to elucidate what that meant to my German classmates, and he made some sort of snarky joke about how the education system is,
pretty accurate joke, really, about how it suffers in comparison to the rest Germany, of yes. Europe. Or,
oh, it's true.
Asia, I'm sure, as
he
well.
He took a pot shot at me, and subsequently, I've never forgotten what harbinger meant. But that's just one example.
Bringer, I presume?
Yeah, harbinger of doom, whatever. Yeah. Someone who brings something. So I'm thinking Shakespeare is incredibly difficult to process. So that's 500 years ago.
I had a similar experience in Germany, misspelling the word Wednesday. And literally, the teacher was like, wait, how's that? And it was, I think I misspelled it too. So it's even more embarrassing than. But
that is really bad.
It's pretty bad. It was a day of the week, whichever day it was. I couldn't spell it.
Mittwoch of Deutsch for the German listeners. And yeah, it was like, you got to modify
something.
And so they're ostensibly in.
They sound like they're into. They sound like they're so in the year 2000.
Oh yeah,
when they're speaking, the slang, the expressions.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And one of them even has like a de rigueur spiky hairdo of that time, of all the boy bands that were rocking in sync.
They're always missing the beaded necklace, the wooden beaded necklace,
or like the choker, all the women were wearing around that time. Right. Just the horrible look.
The uniforms aboard this ship were pretty entertaining. They're like, everything was really bright, ridiculous colors, and apparently that was their vision of the future.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, like, they've made a return to natural fabrics. Like 500 years from now, like, they've completely abandoned polyester and they just went to wool or something. But I should say also, like, the ship, so you have this exploring ship, it's the Solaris, I believe. It's a research vessel. It comes upon the remains of Jason and the freezing equipment.
The students have kind of come to Earth, which is now desolate and destroyed and polluted. No one lives there anymore. They've all moved to Earth 2.
Which is par for the course for sci-fi. Like, Earth has been destroyed. Oh, of course. Yeah. It's like Windows. Yeah, you have a new planet. But I just thought that, every fucking spaceship in every film, always the same.
Solaris is a very common name, too.
We right now fire satellites into space named after luminary explorers. So, like, the Cassini spacecraft, it's always that shit. So it's like, or some solar body. It's always that. So this is the Solaris. Couldn't they have named it just anything? It looks like it's got the pipes. It's got the sliding doors that just go zoop, zoop, and it looks basically like
Star Trek. Very Star Trek-y and very... I found that this film was... is it pushing it to call it a film, or should we just call it a movie?
It's undeniably a movie.
A lot of kind of connections for me between two things. Star Trek, there's some I'll bring up, and then also with Alien.
Oh yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. And Jeff and I podcasted this terrible Italian movie called Contamination, and that also had an abandoned vessel.
Good title, though.
Oh, it's great. An abandoned vessel, and then a bunch of explorers checking it out, and then having something wrong happen, and then having their lives in danger. So it's like, Alien, anytime anyone finds something, explores it, and then it gets loose. I mean, but there's even a call to the Dallas character from Alien in This Stupid Thing. So it's like, the parallels are,
And the actor who played Dallas, Tom Farmer or something, apparently wrote the script for this movie.
Yeah, that really should not be your claim to fame for anything. What I thought was interesting is, like, Kim Newman is a well-regarded horror author. He's written all these best-of guides, and he thought this thing was witty and really well done. I'm like, what was he thinking? Like, I was enjoying myself.
British?
He is.
Oh, yeah. Because I read that it was actually pretty positively received in the UK as opposed to...
Yes, which is wild because there's been sort of bifurcation of reaction to this thing. And it speaks to how dearly horror fans hold these properties to their hearts, that the slasher fans are not happy. Right. And yet the sci-fi fans are just loving this thing because it's a hoot, like undeniably a hoot.
It's a hoot and nanny.
It's a hoot. Yeah.
It is. It's very fun. Lots of self-aware, ridiculous dialogue and one-liners that'll keep you smiling and chuckling. I really quite enjoyed it. I mean, it was a terrible film that I really enjoyed, actually.
I was going to call it Jason X Soundstage. Like, you know, semicolon or colon soundstage because, I mean, my God, like, there's a certain look that, and I don't want to be disparaging, but let's be honest here, there's a certain look that Canadian films, of sure. which this is one,
all right.
they have. And there's a glossy silver blue hue that they have. And this one is...
It's like the hue they put over the film to mask any, you know...
Budgetary constraints that they have. Yeah, although they spent...
The masking tape. hide the masking tape.
They pumped $10 million into this thing.
Mm.
I don't know where it went.
Went all to Jason's upgraded mask.
Yes, and we'll discuss that later. Maybe it went to Craft Services table of Dom Perignon.
They ate well. They ate well during the production.
Or something. Like, I don't know where this money went, but... It was not into the finished product because, I mean, this thing is as cheap, as coupon clipping fucking cheap as any shitty movie I've seen. And this is $11 million. I've seen movies for $200K
sure.
that look better than this.
Yeah.
And this is, I mean, I could probably pinpoint where in Toronto this was filmed, like to the exact intersection of the exact shitty studio soundstage. I mean,
right.
this is grim. Grim stuff. In fact, I was laughing because I just finished this last night. There's a scene where Jason's mask ends up in the bottom of Crystal Lake.
Right.
So this is not a spoiler by any means.
Towards the end.
And Crystal Lake, air quotes around it, it was a fucking aquarium.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if you recall.
Did not
this
know
is
that.
Yeah. This is like minute 92 of this production. The thing sinks to the bottom of.
I do remember
brackish
that moment.
Waters of Crystal Lake.
That's
this
right.
is a fucking aquarium.
They see what they think is like a shooting star.
Yeah, there might as well have been a sucker fish in it, like, you know, some sort of eel swimming by.
It's right.
like, this is, I mean, that is cheap. I mean, we're just 10,000 lakes in Ontario. Whip over there with some camera and just fucking dunk it under something. I mean, it's not, go to the river in Toronto and do it.
Right, Humber River.
Humber River, yeah, 10 minutes away. Just honest to God, like salmon spawn in the Humber River. Go film it there. It's brown water. Stick it under and go to it. I mean, I don't know if that was some sort of in-joke, but it's, man, fucking cheesy as all hell. But yet there's something so like, eminently watchable about these characters. And I'm trying to, I don't know if I have them in my notes. There's the woman from our time, and that's to say 2000.
Right.
She's a Filipina model. I forget her name. Laura Doig or something. She's on the convention circuit in horror. She's supposed to be the conduit through which we relate as fellow, you know, millennium.
Fellow same
travelers. Yeah. And she is the one who's like, oh my God, I can't believe I've been woken up 500 years later.
Right.
You couldn't find someone who adapts to their surroundings more quickly. Like,
yeah.
She has no
oh.
fucking questions about anything.
So, okay, everyone I ever knew is dead. All right,
yeah.
Just moving on. You know, what am I going to do for a living? I don't know. I'm just on this ship. Oh, then the psycho's going to wake up. Oh, okay, well.
Well, to the extent that, like, she's on a ship, which is pretty wild to begin with. Like, holy crap, space travel on this scale.
Wait, I'm in space?
Yeah, to the
extent
no
moment
that
like
is,
that?
No moment. Not yeah. like, so what's happened in the interceding 500 years? Like, what, Earth became uninhabitable.
Oh, okay.
Earth One. Okay. When? Let's, you know, let's get a, do a deep dive into this. When?
Right.
How? Like,
you guys left the planet? What? This is before Elon Musk has started telling everyone one day we're going to live on Mars. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, good callback. SpaceX.
Right.
Jason X.
There you
and
go.
And it was like, this woman was just like, I don't want to say kid in a candy store, but she was just like, adapting instantly. Like, I was thinking of the Woody Allen movie Sleepers.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, where, like, Woody Allen goes under for, I think, an appendix
couple
surgery.
Years.
Oh, and he wakes up 200 years later, and he's just amazed by the incredible advancements
right.
that have been made by humanity, such as oversized vegetables created in a weird lab, and a sex machine called the Orgasmatron. And that took more imagination in a shorter time than this thing
has in the entire
runtime
of the film.
These people talk the same. They dress the same. They have ships that don't look altogether different from what we envisioned in the 60s here.
Right. The Crystal Lake Research Facility. Can we just touch base on this?
Yes. No,
okay,
indeed.
So there's a Crystal Lake... I don't think it's called Camp Crystal Lake Research Facility. Mm. It might just be called Crystal Lake Research Facility.
True enough.
What is the research facility researching there? Is it just Jason they're researching? Or were there other reasons to come to the camp to set up a research facility, and then Jason just happened to be thrown into the research? It's so weird to me.
It is incredibly weird. And they
I like
not make
that a
that,
camp is on. They don't address it.
They don't address it, but it would be akin to naming your site the Spawn Ranch Research Facility and not addressing the fact that Charles Manson's crew slaughtered a bunch of people there. Like, right. It's really weird. Like, Crystal mm-hmm. Lake is, like, unless suddenly some
It's not a massive lake. It's
no.
a pretty small lake.
It's...
Is the camp still next door to the research facility, or do they take over?
No, this is true. And also, like, with such a negative connotation attached to this lake, the last thing you want to do is name your research facility after it.
Right.
Unless you want to upturn, notions of what has transpired there and maybe associate the brand, if you will, with this highfalutin university. Yeah, it's very bizarre. It was a hackneyed means of getting him into a cryogenic state, fun, whatever. He gets thawed out in space, and I don't recall, even though I saw it yesterday, whether it was accidental that he was thawed out or whether there was some sort of nefarious researcher looking.
No, they wanted to thaw both of them out, but they presume the first that Jason was just completely a lost cause and he's
dead. Oh, I see. So there's still some vitals, such as they were for the...
Right, exactly. And then that's where the professor or whatever gets on the video call with the guys lying in bed, this weird grumpy guy.
Oh,
who cares?
yeah, exactly. The grumpy guy with like the headband and like the poor personal
reminded
hygiene.
Reminded me of John McAfee for some reason. Like the tech guy who was accused of murder and all that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, McAfee antivirus. Yeah. Yeah, it's always some guy who looks like they would work the camera on a film set who occupies these like captain roles in these
right.
spaceship. It's so bizarre. I guess they're just writing them into the script.
Right.
Like, write what you know. I was thinking, like, speaking of ripoffs, because you alluded to, there's just shameless alien allusions here.
Absolutely.
There's a cyborg-type robotic
android kind of
thing, and it's sort of like a real doll with whom one of the characters has intimate as you can relations
right.
with, and it
the
reminded
creator, actually,
the creator oh
of, yeah.
even better okay it was almost like a revenant from like fucking Blade Runner, and this thing
sure absolutely
and it was like blinking, and he at one point, and this was I guess the humor Kim Newman alluded to, I'm doing air quotes for the radio audience, of I heard nipples falling off, and then in a weird...
metallic clank of the nipples falling off.
Yeah, and then in a weird science moment of this guy trying to, like, figure out how he can improve...
Should I place nipples on these boobs?
Yeah, but then I guess he does say, oh, I think these will work out okay, or something to that effect.
I like you just the way you are, kind of.
Yeah,
thing, you know?
Oh my God, yeah. And these are the characters in whom we're supposed to be wholly invested.
And also later on, the android character is just a head, you know, mm-hmm. which of course we see exactly in the original Alien as well. Lance Hendrickson.
Okay.
The
reanimator as well with the mentor of Dr. West
right.
being a head, and no one can should believe a talking head
right.
kind of thing. So it is, yeah, man, rip-off central, rip-off of so many movies, and yet, like, when you figure you have a property like this, like, and you go to space, like, no pun intended, like, I was on board with this in a weird kind of way that
right.
I didn't figure I would be. I'm not going to say I love this to the extent of Freddy versus Jason, because I thought that was just hilarious, and I thought I would hate that. And Jeff said, you will like it because it's better than you'd think. And
nice.
I really enjoyed it, but, like, I don't know. I don't want to put you on the spot, but, like, if you were Sean Cunningham in charge of this storied multi-sequel you know, institution of horror. Like, right. Where would you go with this?
Well, they literally went to space, which was the next leg that... It was the best they could come up with there. So, I mean, you made a good point before.
Where, like, if you were to just put on a screenwriter hat, like, what would you do with him here other than... I mean, in Jason Takes Manhattan, they put him on a cruise ship in Vancouver, and where he's in Manhattan for about 5 minutes. So, Jason... you know, takes Lower Mainland BC, would not have been as catchy a title, but like where do you go with him if not space? Would you
maybe in a mine, you know, maybe he in a big mining operation underground where you got like hundreds of people working and shifts and huge equipment that might
be. I kind of like that. So it's like a My Bloody Valentine kind of minor horror. I like that. Okay. Yeah. I kind of like that.
There's a lot you could work with there, you know.
I think maybe an Airbnb, a hotel,
a bed and breakfast. Trapped in a small Victorian bed and breakfast.
No,
in Niagara on the Lake.
Hey, I like that because it takes like a guy who's known for being out there, so you know, delineating between what's here,
right,
our little campsite,
and he's messing up the scrambled eggs and everything. He can't get them right.
Yeah, hey, no, that's not bad. Like he could be a caretaker, where you just see him from the back and he's working the grounds, a la Motel Hell or Tourist Trap or that kind of. I think that's kind of fun. I mean,
Jason gets a job. That's what you might call it.
Like Airbnb is the shit right now, right? It's disrupting. Right. The motel industry as we know it, the extent that Lyft did to and Uber did to the taxi business. So I think that...
Even the home rental scene is being disrupted as a result of it. But yeah, anyways.
I think that's somewhere like on the terrestrial sphere you could put him, even though... But then like would people be pissed that you take him from the wilderness to a more urban setting? But I think that could marry both somehow. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. When it comes to the... humor here, or lack thereof, or the alleged humor, is a few things that made me laugh here.
I alleged there was some decent, some can't be.
You might have some
in
your notes here, but the one I kind of liked was that, of all things, the sport of hockey had been, and as Canadians, you're going to love this, because the sport of hockey had been outlawed 500 years hence.
As of 2024.
Oh,
that was the year.
Oh my God! Oh, they really okay.
So they're you know conceiving of something in the future in 25 years from then, basically that hockey would be outlawed. Now the reasons why they'd be outlawed? What? Too much fighting? Society got pet up? I have no idea, but I thought it was amazing.
Well, of all the sports that would be outlawed, I would have thought number one, football, NFL football, where with post concussions, traumatic brain injury, and then maybe UFC for the same reasons, and maybe boxing. So it was funny.
UFC is a little bit safer than football.
Yeah,
ironically.
Which is really odd. Definitely with the CTS, and I think that's what it's called. And even
traumatic
like
brain.
Something where you develop some sort of plaques that are like seen in dementia patients. So it's like, of all things, like high speed collisions between 250-pound like supreme athletes, that would be banned. But hockey, who knows?
Yeah.
I thought that was a great tie in to obviously the mask, and you know it's something that we got.
What's that? He's got on his face. It's a hockey mask. What's hockey?
Yeah, what's hockey? Yeah, like in one of the in Halloween H2O, there's a wonderful death scene involving a hockey skate blade to the throat of one of them. And it's the guy from Dawson's Creek, I believe, is the victim, and it's quite wonderful. But Pacey,
poor Vanderbeek.
Whoever, Jeremy Jackson or Joshua Jackson or whatever. So I got a kick out of that. I don't know if any sort of little zingers came to mind or anything.
Oh, the first moment I think where I chuckled in the film was when Jason throws a guy down on this massive drill. And he ends up spinning slowly like the hands of a clock. The guy's watching it on the video, and he's like, "Yeah, they've got everything under control there." And then they're like, "So what's with it? How's so and so on the thing?" And he's like, "Oh, he's screwed."
An industrial sized piece of machinery would be doing on board this ship. Like, what was that used for?
Here's another great point. Great point. And I got something else for you. Everyone knows that Jason's weapon of choice, of course, is the machete.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't have it next to him. So he picks up this surgical somewhat meant to be used in some kind of surgery, exact replica pretty much of a machete with some holes going down the side,
oh, yeah.
just angled a different way. I'm like, well, that's pretty convenient. What you'd use that for in any medical sense, besides lopping off an arm, you know, good save Lord. The rest of the body? I have no idea, that's but that was kind of funny.
That's some like Civil War surgery shit kind of thing there. Oh my God! This might be the point in the podcast where we would talk. We'll talk about, and I've alluded to it earlier, what we've learned. So I'm hoping you have learned more than what I've already said, or at least contribute to a little, you know, more lengthy discussion. Now, I can share with you one thing I learned, unless you want to just chime in with one of yours.
You go first.
Okay. Well, they try and thwart Jason toward the end with some sort of virtual reality setup.
Like a holodeck.
Yeah, almost. A hologram holodeck thing where they try and recreate his a sense of place and home for him in a weird Crystal Lake,
they
New
try
Jersey.
To distract him from killing them.
Yeah, and this, I gotta say, I mean, gaming has not advanced too greatly in 500 years because he's occupying this virtual world.
Right.
It's pretty crappy. Let's be honest, right? But he does come across a couple campers, mm-hmm. Both of whom doff their tops in wondrous fashion, saying, and there's winking in-jokes alluding to the typical victim he would
absolutely
prey upon.
Yeah.
And they get naked, they're very attractive, and I believe he beats one of them with a sleeping bag, beating the other one, which is a callback to an earlier Friday film.
Oh.
I can't recall, it was one of the... I want to say it's either 4 or 5, but don't quote me on that. It is a callback, as these crappy films so often do, to an earlier film. So another thing I've learned is that the mask, he comes up with this sort of exoskeleton body frame suit when he's like, I can't, even though it was only yesterday, I can't recall.
So they kind of dispatch Jason, the android takes care of him. He ends up falling back on this kind of regeneration table that we assume is broken, but then surprise, surprise.
Voila, yeah.
And then, so
it just
as
took
it's,
unplugging it and then right. plugging it back in as a
oh,
reboot.
Oh, there's a spark there. It's going to work. So as it's trying to reconstitute Jason, it's like, oh, we're missing organic matter. And then, oh, we're going to make synthetic material to make. So, yeah, that was kind of where that.
It kind of worked in a way.
Yeah.
There was a, oh my God, and my memory is failing me here, but there was a WCW promotion, and I believe Davey Boy Smith and the Nature Boy Ric Flair were on hand to unveil this new wrestler.
Okay.
And there was this infamous moment from around this time of WCW wrestling.
Right.
And they botched live on television the unveiling of this wrestler.
It was like the opening of Capone's Vault kind of deal.
Yes. He burst through this door and they announced him with much fanfare. He tripped on this like 1 foot high little ledge that the production team had built, this doorway, and he landed straight on his face and his mask fell off and they had to cover up in real time like this disastrous entry. And I wish I could remember this.
Wow. I need to search for this on YouTube. This sounds brilliant.
It's a fantastic scene, and suffice it to say, this character, he was removed from any sort of action in the WCW instantly because he was a one-off gimmick.
And then everyone saw his face.
It back on, and there was a voiceover done from backstage, and it wasn't matching what was going on. It was just a shit show. He tried to save it by putting the mask back on, and that glitter mask that he had, it was sort of a stormtrooper glitter mask, was kind of analogous to this exoskeleton silvery sheen mask that Jason was sporting. But I thought that was kind of cool in a way.
Looked very much like a wrestler character
it was great.
The end of it there.
I mean, and then when he was dispatching of crew members, we'd be remiss to not mention one of the deaths for which this film is known, and it's featured in our book, Death by Umbrella.
I imagined it would be.
The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons. It's a dry ice, liquid nitrogen death, where one of the crew members' face is dunked into this. I think it's minus 280, whatever liquid and nitrogen, you know, works at. I don't know the chemistry.
Zero on the Kelvin scale, basically. Yeah.
Pulls him out, shatters the face on like a desk, and that was pretty phenomenal.
That was very inventive. And the one you mentioned as well, when he's in the kind of simulation, literally beating someone to death who's in a sleeping bag and using that as the weapon to beat the other person in the sleeping bag.
Yeah, it's very
awesome.
Meta, and it's pretty good. And I kind of like that death from the earlier installment. It was cool that they brought that back, but I mean, these women were just very... I mean, they're very porn starry in a way that they had the central casting look to them as like glossy,
doe-eyed, constantly smiling.
Vintage video. What is it? I'm putting it on the spot. Vintage video, whatever, the pornographer from the 2000s.
Vivid
video. Okay. Yeah, they had that.
They were kind of known for a very glitzy aesthetic.
And as opposed to the earlier Friday movies, which are more known for unknown actors who look almost not plain, but just sort of reasonably just normal, semi-attractive people. So it was kind of a little over the top, that little bit there. But it was funny how they tried to use that to as a decoy before they got the Revenant to, I guess, arm herself to the teeth to be able to... I got to say, another thing I learned is this thing really was criminally overlong, even at 93 minutes, because they had 15 minutes where the ship was running out of air or there was some sort of breach in the hull.
Losing atmosphere or something.
They were losing pressure, and then they had to worry about getting rescued by some other ship, which is also alien-esque.
They blew up the space station that they were going to dock at first. How? By glancing what looked like a skylight.
Yeah.
It looked like they broke the skylight as they passed through. And then they don't even bother showing the visual effects of the space station blowing up. I don't recall if they did. It might have been just a bit of a fireball.
I just got to say, I hope the future is as envisioned by the likes of Star Wars, where you just have this giant garage open up to...
That'd be brilliant.
And no one is... affected by it whatsoever. The thing opens like a garage, and the stormtroopers are just walking around as if it's like there's no gravity or pressure or anything. It's just like they would be flung out into space at hundreds of kilometers an hour, presumably. Right. Like a spacewalk, if you were to let go, you'd be gone, right?
Right.
Plus the fact that it's incredibly cold to the point where spacesuits are designed to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the stormtroopers would just be wandering around. Thing opens, the ship docks, nothing.
Just,
it doesn't matter, you just hang out.
Just like a garage door opening, like you said, yeah.
It doesn't matter. And this thing as well, like, I believe the mothership also had a cityscape. Like, it had like high-rise office towers coming out of it. It's very weird. Like, Roger Ebert alluded to this, saying... It was a weird thing, and I hastened to ask why. Because he gave it... half a star.
And he quoted, and apparently he quoted a line in the movie, "This sucks on so many levels," as she's being sucked through the gate, or the grate, she's trying to hold on.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was really unbelievable. Some of this actually reminded me too of this. Oh my God, the Orville, which is a Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy
show on Fox,
and it's like, There's no imagination.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Like, you'd think these people are traveling through space. Like, maybe the human form has evolved to be fully transhuman to the point where you can be 10 feet tall, or that you can have eyes that are bigger, or that you can see like 5,000 miles ahead. Like, there's nothing apart from the one guy who got his arm severed. And then they had some serum to regenerate his limb like a newt or like a lizard. Guy with long hair, and he had his arm cut off, and then they have a serum to regenerate it. But there's no imagination of what I would envision space to be. Like, it's all based on what people knew in the 70s.
Or previous iterations through film or whatever. Like, that's built the basis of what you're going to create this little world of space for.
Nothing. Like, why not, like, encounter... Hell, Star Trek might have done it in the first one. Encounter a bunch of super beings who are, like, an odor.
Right.
Or like, a frequency. It's anything. Something with these people are just like, they're humans. They're humanoids. They talk like us. They dress like us from the 2000s. They haven't changed.
Right.
Their banter is the same. To wit, when they cryogenically thaw out the hot chick from Earth from 500 right. years ago, one of them says, you know, this is pre-Me Too. One of them says, I'll do it. They basically say, I'd love to fuck her.
Out.
Yeah, right. I'll, you know, work with her. Like, I'll, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, that part hasn't been bred out of our DNA by then. Like, even, like, that's wrong for now to say that.
Right.
And the fact that in 500 years, they've not advanced beyond, like, wanting to fuck a corpse. That's like, let's be real here. Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
I thought there was kind of along those lines. There was a really amusing moment in the film where the maker of the android is talking to the android, and what's our chances of survival? And she's like, I give it 12%.
Yes.
And he's like, isn't there anything we can do to increase our chances? So then they kiss, and she's like, now it's 53%. And I'm thinking to myself, that's hilarious.
It's the power of love.
Like in a horror movie.
Huey Lewis.
Because in a horror movie, you're making out to increase your chance of survival in a horror movie.
Not going
to
happen.
That's usually it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And I think I wasn't sure if that was a self-aware kind of moment in the film or if that was just something that ended up working, you know?
Well, it reminded me of like the Panther cologne from Anchorman. Like 40% of the time it works, half the time, wherever it is.
Right.
It was like, it was very funny. And yeah, but also, okay, while you're on the topic of the Revenant, like, she wasn't hot at all. So at least in the weird science thing where you're conjuring up from whole cloth this perfect woman from scratch,
right,
using whatever, like, she's just some sort of, like, beanpole thin, like, weird Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction hairdo. And like, what?
Sure.
I'm not into that. I don't know. Like, it wasn't, maybe this speaks more to the limitations of the casting. And
well, that actress might have been the most prolific on the whole film, except for Cronenberg, of course. You know, obviously. But she was in a couple Canadian series, you know, Andromeda or something.
Oh, I thought that was the other one. Yeah. But yeah, Andromeda. Ooh,
yeah. Ooh,
yeah. So I guess they were kids. Yeah.
Big time.
Said, big time. We've got
Firefly.
So we've, you know, dived in to the extent that we can. We've got this real doll, Revenant,
right,
who it turns out, and this is, you know, spoiler, to be the Mary Sue, to be the ass-kicking female,
the Ripley, if you will, of the ship, you know?
Yeah, and to save the day, star rating. I mean, like, you know, we'll preface this by saying, like, we both know, I mean,
I gave her an upgrade. Now she's the most lethal killing machine you've ever imagined.
Yeah. Just a minor software upgrade, and this
right.
thing's good to go. I mean, she was doing these backflips and Kill Bill style,
Resident Evil kind of, like, moves,
yeah, just,
you know.
Badassery moves, but you should have learned from the fact that if you can't kill them by firing squad, by lethal injection, and by whatever means of freezing his cells.
Why are you bothering with these guns?
Those guns prove lethal.
Right.
Like, we both know. Like, we're under no illusions. This is a fucking terrible movie. Like, on many levels, right? This is...
But how so?
You know, like...
Back that up, though.
Okay, you know...
Yes, you're absolutely right.
It looks terrible. It travels... In the lane of so many sci-fi films that have gone before, whether it's Planet of the Vampires to Alien to, I mean, any of the Star Treks to any of the, just anything, any explorer type film,
mm-hmm.
It is very poorly acted, poorly written, poorly conceived on most levels, and yet there's something, it's kind of endearing about it that
there
I was
really
on board for the first hour, and then I started to, I mean, you know, I have a 1 month old newborn at home, and
right.
he was being upset by some of the sounds from the film. I had to take him into the other room.
He might have been upset about the acting. Really,
there's no, you know, Sir Anthony Hopkins, you know, Heath Ledger as the Joker. There's no
right.
bravura.
There's no method acting here.
If they have a method, we've yet to hear about it. It's bad, right? So as a film, and you used, you know, film versus movie delineation. As a film, it's a zero.
Right.
It's what Ebert says, but this is an entertaining as fuck production.
It is. I agree with you completely.
Like, I don't want to say it's, you know, I don't want to say it's up there with, like, well, my favorite is probably 3 or 4, but it's not, I don't know. It doesn't bother me to the extent I think it would have had it been a member of the franchises that you alluded to earlier, the Halloweens, right, or the Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, those would bother me if they reached similar creative nadirs. Like, that mm-hmm. would really offend me, but I don't really hold this as, like, I don't see this as some great transcendent work. It's fucking Friday.
Sure.
It's camp counselors in the buff. I like to camp. I like camp counselors. I liked camping growing up. There's a killer. He
killed. I like the letter C. That yeah. works too. No,
he kills nice them using various implements, which we obviously liked enough to devote a book right. to. So it's like, it's fun. It's mindless. I'm going to give it like probably a solid 2.75 out of 5. Like it doesn't deserve some of the critical opprobrium and the vitriol that in some circles, like, I've seen way worse.
Sure.
And it's funny. Okay. Like, considering, I remember now, we saw Halloween 2018 together.
Right.
With our significant others. And we were not impressed.
Right.
And that thing, I think, maybe bothers me more than this.
Sure. And I think perhaps the reason for that is because that was kind of really done in earnest, right? Like, it was a serious attempt to make a scary movie that brought a whole bunch of different elements together, and it didn't really hit the mark, and that was frustrating, right? Yeah. Whereas this, you kind of... The title, what is the, not the byline, but the blurb on the poster? In my head, I thought it was, "In space, no one can hear you scream," but I think that was like Alien or something.
Yeah, that's Alien.
Was it Evil Has an Upgrade or something?
Oh, I forgot. Or got an upgrade? That sounds about accurate.
It's Jason in space. You know going into it that they're not really serious. You know it's going to be more campy than scared. Yeah. You know?
And so, the Leprechaun franchise did something similar, so it's like anytime you... I mean, what are you going to do with this? I mean, this is crap. But it's funny, you know, like, I don't want to, you know, get on a tangent here, but, you know, we both saw Halloween, and I had work to get to the next day, so we didn't have a chance to have much of a discussion on that. But right.
We weren't able to debrief after the film.
No, but your wife said, you know, was... you know, fairly underwhelmed, shall we say.
And she can barely handle horror movies yeah. generally, too. Like, she gets really scared of this
and
stuff.
It was conspicuous as to how little noise was made in the theater during that, and that's telling.
There was like one jump scare, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's not always a barometer for how you should treat horror, because...
No,
because
it's kind of cheap, a jump scare, in my
cheap,
opinion.
But, you know? But like, when you have people react to certain things that are cheesy, I mean, I've... you know, Oculus or some stupid crappy, you know, one of those types of movies, they have lots of jump scares, and there's some of these, you know, Ouija board type movies that have these, but the crowd at least reacts in some respect.
Right.
For that screening, they didn't at all.
Pin drop.
It was brutal. So, I mean, to the extent that thing, and as time has elapsed, I've become more irritated by that film, and right. To the extent that I probably will not revisit it.
It's an affront to common decency and sensibility.
It is. Monty Python.
Yeah.
That's a bad movie. This is a bad movie in a different way.
It's a bad but enjoyable... It's a bit of a romp, if
it,
you will.
It is.
It's fun. It doesn't take itself seriously. If your expectations are not high... you know, you're going into it knowing what you're going to get. Listen, I think you're going to have a fun time watching this film if you haven't already.
Oh, yeah. And I bought our Halloween tickets like a month in advance, and I was just chomping at the bit for this fucker.
The expectation, the buildup,
oh,
didn't,
my God.
Didn't help the final product.
I sent Jeff the trailer. I said, fuck it, this is fucking awesome. This is great. This is great. And then just, yeah. So, I mean, this one, I mean, Jason Takes Manhattan, I think that's a fairly brutal film. That is a bad film for the reasons that... Yeah, again, you take a Manhattan and then you...
Reminds me of Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. Or like, what's that Woody Allen movie, something Manhattan.
Just Manhattan.
Oh, well, other than there's another Manhattan.
Oh,
or,
oh, I'm
God.
Not sure.
Oh, yeah, just Manhattan.
Right, yeah.
But God, no. Oh, my God. I don't care what anyone says. I love this city.
Yeah.
Star rating for me, 2.75. What about for you for this production?
I would give it about 2.2. And again, with the footnote... It is fun, you know? It's a fun movie. You're not going to be upset after watching it if you know what you're getting into.
No, I mean, there's way worse.
Like, sure.
This had me going for the bulk of it, and you know, I'm fine, and I'm curious to see where they would go next, because you know, Halloween with Rob Zombie delved into his childhood, Michael right. Myers, so I don't know where this is gonna go.
I found it interesting when I was doing some reading up on this one. I kind of read that Freddy versus Jason was in like production hell. I mean,
yeah, it was
like,
in purgatory,
it wasn't about
yeah.
to, you know. And they wanted to do something to maintain or restoke people's interest in the Jason character. And I think previously it was 9 years earlier stretch between the previous film, which I guess Jason Goes to Hell, and then this one.
Jesus Christ.
A long stretch.
That's amazing. And, well, to the extent that this didn't...
And that makes a lot of sense, too. Let's do something to make them think about Jason.
I would love what like the executives at New Line would have been thinking when they were pitched this thing. Like, God. I don't... like it has to have a bigger budget than any of its predecessors. And the fact that anyone would greenlight such a thing... I mean, right. it made almost double what its production costs were. But the confidence that they... in which they
I think we got a winner here, Tom. You know? Let's see if...
I got this idea for a film. Work with me here. Kramer versus Kramer
in space.
Yeah, you take Dustin Hoffman. He's on another planet.
He's really unhappy about his divorce.
But get this, it's interplanetary divorce.
So oh,
whole different thing.
The legal complications, and the discourse.
They're out of this world. Yeah. Oh my God.
They're stellar, I tell you. They're stellar.
And even if this film wasn't as stellar as you might have hoped, we hope you enjoy our
shtick here.
Our shtick.
As we've laid it out for you in the last
minutes.
And
we hope we're a shining light in the firmament as you look to podcasts to listen to for the future. So without further ado, we'll wrap this thing up and we shall talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.